This talk is to do with caring for members of one's family when they're unable to look after themselves. My experience has been first when my mother came to live with us, and later when my husband Peter became ill. There was absolutely no trouble with looking after Peter, but looking after my mother proved, sadly, to be a temporary measure. After a succession of operations over the best part of 3 years and suffering the discomfort and degradation of 2 colostomy bags, Peter died in the Mary Potter Hospice in March 1995. Due to the constant and professional ministrations of the visiting nurses from the hospital and the wonderful treatment at the hospice, he was given expert care. I'm eternally grateful to those amazing people. I was able to stay at the hospice for the last 10 days of Peter's life. His friends and family were able to visit, and we were all there when he died. It was very different for my beloved mother. One of the most painful things I've ever had to do in my life was to send her away when I was unable to look after her any longer. This was back in the 70s, when care for the elderly was minimal. My mother suffered from Parkinson's disease, which she developed in her 60s. She died when she was 83. She'd lived very happily in a central Christchurch flat, playing bridge at her club, lunching with her friends, and seeing her family, till she suffered a hemorrhage from a hiatus hernia. But to her continual regret, her devoted GP brought her back to life by administering a blood transfusion. She begged him not to, and to let her die in peace. But a conference outside her hospital door decided otherwise, and back to life she came, but not to the one she'd enjoyed. She had to leave her flat and remove to a rest home of sorts. Due to the constant and professional ministrations of the visiting nurses from the hospital and the wonderful treatment at the hospice, he was given expert care. I'm eternally grateful to those amazing people. I was able to stay at the hospice for the last 10 days of Peter's life. His friends and family were able to visit, and we were all there when he died. It was very different for my beloved mother. One of the most painful things I've ever had to do in my life was to send her away when I was unable to look after her any longer. This was back in the 70s, when care for the elderly was minimal. My mother suffered from Parkinson's disease, which she developed in her 60s. She died when she was 83. She'd lived very happily in a central Christchurch flat, playing bridge at her club, lunching with her friends, and seeing her family, till she suffered a hemorrhage from a hiatus hernia. But to her continual regret, her devoted GP brought her back to life by administering a blood transfusion. She begged him not to, and to let her die in peace. But a conference outside her hospital door decided otherwise, and back to life she came, but not to the one she'd enjoyed. She had to leave her flat and remove to a rest home of sorts. I remember how infuriated she became when the matron at this place scissored off the flap on her duvet to keep the bed looking tidy. When my mother had been perfectly fit, she'd toured the rest homes of Christchurch to see where she would like to go in the future. But she came back vowing and declaring that she wouldn't be able to stand any of them. Everyone was in bedroom slippers. Not that there was a lot of choice in those days. At this stage of her life, my children were aged 4 and 6. We had a 3-bedroom house in Karori. I was out for 3 mornings a week recording Listen with Mother, so we had someone in to look after our small son, Gordon. It was decided that my mother would come to live with us. Peter was incredibly understanding and patient. It would be no trouble. The children moved in together. We set up Gordon's bedroom for my mother and turned the sitting room into a day room for her. Then came a succession of minders. The mornings were already sorted, that was fine, but there were others. A physiotherapist, the doctor, and if we wanted to go out at night, a babysitter who didn't mind taking my mother to the loo. We were so lucky. A student friend just up the road would do that job, and she's still one of my dearest friends. My mother needed a great deal of care. She really couldn't be left alone for more than about 20 minutes. My garden suffered. The children didn't suffer, but they did miss out on a bit of attention, and having them both in the same bedroom when they were 4 years apart didn't work all that well. Their interests and their energies were very different. So after 6 months we had to call a halt and send my mother back to Christchurch. I can't describe how difficult and painful that decision was. I don't think she ever understood why she couldn't continue to stay with us, and we found it impossible to explain in terms that wouldn't be hurtful. My brother lives just out of Christchurch, and he was able to find a home which had night attention. That was the problem in Wellington. There were rest homes, but none of them provided rest care of a professional standard. I combed the area from Upper Hutt, up and down the coast, but nothing was available. And the accommodation that was found for her in Christchurch had no private rooms. She stayed in an open ward. It was anything but ideal. I was and am filled with regret and guilt. I don't think she ever understood what had happened to her. It was impossible to explain without sounding incredibly callous. I visited, of course, but I wasn't there when she died. I, however, am just so lucky. My daughter, her husband, and I bought a house together. They were living in Newtown, and I was in a very nice but three-story townhouse in Bidwell Street. And then I injured my knee and realized that having to climb three stories to my bedroom was putting me in a bit of a quandary. There was no way of combining the sleeping and living area on one floor of my townhouse. I was in an awkward situation which would not really improve with time. So we combined resources and bought a house down on the south coast. And now I'm on the ground floor, an inch climb over the doorstep, in a two-bedroom apartment created from two large garages, a scungy old wash house, and a small office. And we get all-day sun, and the view is unparalleled. I have to say that we get every wind that ever blows as well, but we don't complain even when it blows a camellia out of the ground. But that doesn't happen every day. And, of course, I'm never lonely. There's always something happening. People calling in, telephones ringing, children wanting something, from a piece of my cheese, which seems more delicious than that provided upstairs, to a turn on my computer, or some practice on the piano. There's a lot of trading between the floors, the newspaper, my grater, eggs, onions, plates. At one point I had no knives and far too many teaspoons. The children are Peter, aged 9, Thomason, who's 7, and now Davida, only 18 months old. They all have different needs and desires. I've always sung them songs and read them stories, and babysitting is a piece of cake. The two older ones come down with their rugs and pillows and tuck up on my sofas. When their parents return, they pick them up, and in the morning the children wake up in their own beds. Couldn't be better. We all get on very well, and I sometimes think it's because we've been lucky enough to have worked together professionally. It's certain that we love each other, and that always helps. So what I'm really driving at is the need all of us have to be needed. The universal desire of everyone on the planet. The need to be needed. But when my mother became unable to look after herself in any way, she wasn't needed anymore. Her need was to be cared for. And as I've said, there just weren't in her day the facilities to provide that care. That was her tragedy, and mine. Try as I might, there was no way to continue looking after her. It was a ghastly wrench sending her back to Christchurch. My brother was great. He found a home which would give her the care she needed. I don't think my mother had ever been particularly lonely. She'd been on her own since my father died, relatively young, in 1945. Soon after, she and I had moved from the remote North Canterbury sheep farm, which my father had insisted they occupied in the Depression, to a comfortable flat in Christchurch, where she'd carved out a new and probably more interesting life for herself. The only thing she would have missed would have been her poultry. She loved her hens, her ducks and bantams. My mother was the most loved and the most important member of my family when I was growing up. I was born when she was 47, a great age in those days. I don't think my father ever recovered from the embarrassment caused by the birth of another child only 18 months after my brother. Be that as it may, he took very little notice of me, so I was my mother's child. She encouraged me, supported me in every way, and allowed herself to be hugged and kissed at every opportunity. I was away from New Zealand for 7 years, and may never have returned at all if she hadn't become very frail. When I came back, my mother was still living in her comfortable flat in Christchurch. She was very frugal. There was an occasion when she rang the grocer with an order for 2 sausages and 1/4 loaf of bread. "Goodness, Mrs. Fulton," he said, "are you having a party?" Light bulbs were all of an exceptional dimness. But it has to be remembered that my mother had experienced 2 world wars and the Depression. She was an intelligent woman who was well educated, who read widely, and was knowledgeable about a large range of subjects. I often witnessed her listening to the radio, reading the paper, and watching television all at the same time. She had a delightfully eccentric personality, which made it all the sadder to witness her decline. It was almost as bad when Peter was so ill. But at least there was no difficulty attached to keeping him at home, and his carers were the dedicated district nurses who looked after him with loving kindness. Medical services were more than adequate. Help was available at any time. Not so for my mother. When she became unable to look after herself, she went to the first of mostly inadequate nursing homes, run, it seemed, for the owners, not for the patients. The last home she was in, and there'd been several others, gave her no privacy and practically no stimulation. There were few people left who could visit, and though my brother and his family were very attentive and did their best, they were very busy people. When one is old and infirm, the need to be needed can't really be satisfied. What can a person who's confined to bed or a wheelchair, and who may not be entirely cognizant of their surroundings, do to be needed? I'm asking a question for which I have no ready answer. I suppose the only one is that these people are needy. That's their function. But I wonder if there is a better solution. If there is any way that dependent people can still feel of use in the world. If there are any tasks, however small, that might make them feel they can still contribute, that it's still worthwhile being alive. I think perhaps that the only thing that can be given without movement, with only the expression of the face and the look in the eyes, is love. Those of us who get it and can still give it are very, very lucky indeed. Love can be expressed, of course, through care, the willingness to nurse one's loved ones at home. And, of course, it's easier now that district nursing is much more developed. But it's a huge decision to make, and not everyone is physically or mentally equipped to tackle such a load. If you're faced with this situation, my advice is to seek for as much help as you can get, to research every source for advice and assistance, both practical and financial. Don't be too proud to ask. Remember that you're probably saving the health service a fortune. In many ways, it's a privilege to look after the elderly, particularly if children are involved. There's a natural link between the young and the old. I know that from personal experience. There are stories to be read, songs to be sung, and family history to be shared. History which might otherwise stay unrecorded. I am eternally grateful for the opportunities I have had in my old age.